This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 575, brought to you by Harry's. Go to harrys.com right now and enter code iFanboy at checkout to get a free trial set. That's harrys.com, code iFanboy. And iFanboy listeners just like you. Five extravaganza of the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast.
Yay.
I'm Ron Richards, and with me is Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And yay. Josh Flanagan.
Yay. Live.
Listen, guys, 575 is a milestone, and we should celebrate it as such.
Anything that ends in a five, I believe, is cause for an anniversary celebration of some kind.
At least a double-sized issue, right?
We should get a variant.
Every 25th issue.
Yeah, it's every 25th issue. Yeah. So.
Which is weird when you think about it, when you stop and think about it.
You know what I think the kids would buy? What's that, Irv? I think if we said every 25th issue was an anniversary, we could sell 8 more copies. Put it on the cover.
The comic book story. Actually, right there.
Did they do it for the 25th issues or just the 50th and the 75 and the zeros?
Oh, I remember getting 25th issue extravaganzas. Absolutely. Yep. I remember Dark Hawk number 25 was a big deal. Yeah.
In the 80s.
That is so weird. Why did we fall for that?
Because it's literally just 2 years of books. Like, it's not like...
It doesn't even make sense. It's not even an anniversary issue. It's a double...
What I like is the question, why did we fall for that? And that's because... No.
Why are we falling for it still?
And that's because we are iFanboy, and every week we read a stack of comics where we fall for it every week, and one of us picks our favorite book, and we call that the pick of the week, and we talk about that book, other books from the week. We do the patron pick, which is always fun, and if we have some time, we'll read some of your email and respond to you directly. No matter what, it's fun. But also, no matter what, it's a spoiler-laden hour. So we're reviewing the books. We're going to talk about what happens in them. So if you haven't read your books, you don't want it spoiled, then come back and listen after you've read your books. There's your warning.
Let's be honest. We'll be dicks about it.
Yeah.
we'll just say it.
Yes. So, Connor, you had the pick of the week, and it's not the patron pick, but it's your own pick of the week, and it's a celebration of an issue that ends in five. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, I feel like you've taken the wind out of my sails now that it's the supersized anniversary issue of Action Comics 975.
Extravaganza!
We just had one for Detective Comics for a different number because they're not the same number, I don't think. But that issue was done poorly. This was done very well. This is what I want out of an anniversary issue. It celebrates the legacy of the character. It features a somewhat of an all-star creative team in that there's a backup by Paul Dini and Ian Churchill. That ties into the main story. And this is part two of Superman Reborn. Yeah, part two of the crossover between Superman and Action Comics, in which I guess Superman's going to be reborn. I assume that's from the title. It features a story by Dan Jurgens, art by Doug Monkey. And we have the big reveal here about who the other Clark Kent was, and I'm going to brace myself for Josh's angry reaction in a second. But for me, this was Superman in the best possible Silver Age sense. So we, and as you recall, in the action in the Superman issue part one, the creepy Clark Kent showed up at the Kent farm, stole Jonathan, left him a photo album with all these old photographs of Superman in his prime, with the trunks on, and we disappeared. Now Superman and Lois go to confront the new Clark Kent at his apartment. Because again, why did they let this get this far? Why did they just allow this Clark Kent to exist in the world? I'm just going to keep wondering why they just let this happen. But
seems okay. It's not like anything weird's happened before.
He's got an apartment and a job and whatever. We'll just let it go. So there's a great sort of middle section in which Superman thinks maybe or Clark Kent turns into Lex Luthor, and then he turns into Bizarro, and then he turns into Brainiac, and then he turns into Mongul, and then he turns into Parasite. Then he turns into Cyborg Superman. Then he turns into Doomsday. Then it's finally revealed.
That's called padding, by the way.
No, that's for me was the best. That was almost the segment that got the book.
Really?
The week. Yeah, this is.
I saw an artist just going, oh, thank God, I'm done with six of these pages without even trying.
This is.
And it's not even a criticism.
Rogue Gallery, yeah. And then it's revealed that the fake Clark Kent was, in fact, Mr. Mixies Pitalik, who. Was angry because he's been neglected. And I thought that was a wonderful twist. And then the backup story was seeing what Mr. Mixie's Piddalick's been up to after he kidnapped Jonathan. And then becomes a whole meta commentary on Superman in general, where we see him as the animated Superman. We see him in Kurt Swan Superman. We see all through the ages. And he explains to Jonathan who he is and why how he comes to visit every 6 months. And he hasn't been, this new Superman hasn't, he hasn't been around, really, if you think about it. He hasn't dealt with a new Superman. He's feeling very like a jilted girlfriend, and so he showed up to muck up Superman's life. And I, as an old-school Superman fan, and Mixie's Pitalik adventures were always some of my favorites, this was like a book written directly for me.
Why in my head did I have it that you hated Mr. Mixie's Pitalik? Blah, blah, blah.
Mr. who?
Mixie's Pitalik.
Whatever, that guy. For some reason, I thought you hated that character in these issues.
Oh,
okay. I don't know. I was reading this. I was like, oh, Connor's going to hate this. I'm like, oh, it's the pick. for some reason, I just had it in my head that you didn't like that. I don't know why.
Okay. Well, no, there can certainly be bad adventures drawn by. But the thing I liked about it always was that it showcased that Superman was smart and strategic and not just strong and invulnerable. He always beat him with his wits. And so that was that's the element that he brings to Superman that I always liked.
Right. For me, I mean, I'm not reading Superman, and you guys know my disdain for Superman. I thought the first half of this book was nonsense, but the backup was delightful.
The backup was really fantastic.
Yeah,
the combination of the two got it to pick.
Well, let me add to that, I suppose. So, I guess it was Wednesday. I read the first half of the book. Like I just stopped working for a minute. And I just read the first half of the book, and I got to it, and I was like. I don't really like that. I'm not saying I was throwing an iPad across the room, but I guess it wasn't what I had in mind. And I said, I didn't tell you guys what I thought, but I just said, I have a reaction. And that was it. And then the next time I went back to finish reading my books, I read the second bit. And I got to that, and I was like, I've changed my mind about the entire thing. So, I mean, in a way, you're both right to me. In that, like, I read the first half and I didn't really like it. It wasn't even that it was bad. Like, I was like, I don't know what's wrong with that. It wasn't what I guess I wanted. But then I thought that the Deanie Churchill, and also Ian Churchill surprised me. I think I lumped him into a different category of artist than he is.
Yep.
I think of him as like a David Finch type, but he's not.
He's not at all. No, he's
I know that.
Yeah.
I think it's because he came out of Wildstorm and that. At least I think he did. Either way, I was like, oh, this is great. And all the styles were really fun to read. And I liked the characterization of Mixie's Pitalik. And I'm not saying it's my favorite way to resolve it, but it absolutely makes sense. It's a cool, you know, it is Superman. Like, you can't, it's undeniably Superman. And it fits in that way. I agree with Connor. And the more you say it, the more I think about it. Like, why were they just okay with that? But I guess they had a lot of other stuff going on. And I can understand that.
I still feel like it's a priority. Any downtime is spent wondering why there's a doppelganger pretending to live my life. I feel like that is an issue.
They're a little complicit in this, I think. I think that, well, yeah.
Well, Also, don't forget that he's a replace. He's an alternate.
Right.
So he can't speak. He's like, well, I'm not really supposed to be here either. So, you know, live and right. Let live, I guess.
Who am I to judge?
It's like a Russian nesting doll of alternates.
Like, honestly, what is the protocol on that? You're not real. Well, neither are you.
Touché. You win. Yeah. You win this round, sir. This is like, you know, any little bit that brings back what has been lost in DC is very exciting to me. And this, you know, this kind of story wouldn't have fit in the 90s grim and gritty New 52 that we had 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Right. This, they're trying to bring this element back. It's coming slowly in drips and drabs, but, you know, this is Superman. You got to accept the goofy with the serious, and the goofiness of Mixis Pilic is an important part of his legacy. And again, it's a good part of his legacy because this is not a character he can punch and win. He has to outsmart him. And that was always the fun thing about it, was that you were reminded about that, that, you know, he's not just a muscle that Batman sends out on the Justice League mission. He's actually smart.
Right.
And I like that element too. And also, as a celebration of Superman, this second story was fantastic. And also just all the different versions. I mean, there was even a joke about how his name has been said different ways. Because if you go through all the different TV shows, things he's appeared in, including Supergirl recently this season, his name has been said 10 different ways.
Well, it's difficult to say, as evident as me trying to say it earlier.
Right. Mixel.
Mixel, not going to work here anymore.
It's just Pitlick.
Yeah.
Well, there's the part where we see him in the animated version and the Lego version, and we see Mixis Pitalik, Mixis Plick, Mixel Plick, infinite variations.
I like they said in the animated series. That's right.
That animated episode is amazing. That's one of the best Superman animated episodes.
I mean, let's just, like, Paul Dini was absolutely the right guy to do that. That was laser-focused precision.
Yeah.
And having that person do that story. And so it heads up, I'm guessing, to the editor? You know, for saying, what if we do it like this?
He's the guy to do this. Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, and there's a pantheon of writers who get it, you know, in terms of the historical aspect, and Dini is definitely one of them. So, yeah.
Tell you something, I would not argue with a lengthy-ish run, or 6 or 12 issues of Paul Dini doing for Action Comics what he did for Detective Comics.
I don't think anyone would.
I think the time for that has come.
No right-thinking American or international citizen would disagree with that.
All right, you know what? $150 American dollars.
Whoa.
Yeah.
There's the bounty right there.
So you're willing to subsidize his salary up to $150?
That one page.
Just one page. So, that's all it is.
So that was my pick of the Action Comics 975. It came late in the game. Before Action Comics 975, I was fairly convinced Astro City 42 was the pick. And it was the pick up until I read Action Comics.
Astro City 42 was just, like, talk about the definition of comic book delightfulness. It's Astro City. It was just like
also a clinic. It was a clinic. It was it's a one page story about a supervillain who he had an adventure, and he's sort of the Black Manta allegory here, and so he's fighting the Aquaman person. He gets swept off to sea, ends up washing up on a deserted island, and he's lived there his whole life, and he's been working the whole time to get back in the game, and he finally goes back in the game, and it all goes wrong. I thought this was great.
This was amazing.
I don't know who the artist was, because they left off a credits page.
It's Matthew Clark. It's on the when you slide the cover to the side, and it gives you the metadata. It's Matthew Clark and Sean Parsons. What was interesting about him is that he wasn't aping a Brent Anderson style at all.
No.
Didn't not fit. Like, you know, storytelling wise, spot on. But I was like, this art's really good.
What's funny is that when it first started, I was like, oh, this isn't Brett Anderson style. Like, I kind of like it, you know. But as I got deeper into the story, it just everything kind of clicked into place.
Yeah.
And and it shows that, like, you don't necessarily need to ape Brett Anderson to tell a good Astro City story. I think this is, you know, one of those areas where lettering comes to play, where, like, that Astro City look of lettering by Comicraft is important, and that helps to kind of frame it up and put you in that Astro City kind of state of mind. But
also, storytelling and pacing was, pretty classic.
Yeah.
So that wasn't.
I mean, this is just fantastic. You get in all this, you get in one issue, you get a sense of who this character is, what happened to him, how he got deserted on this deserted island for 30 years, what he's been doing in the time, and a insight into his genius. And then you see him try to do his like reemergence into the scene, and you know the emotional kind of roller coaster of psyching himself up and going back into it and getting into it, and then getting hit in the face with the reality of it, like the fact that he couldn't speak because he hasn't talked to anybody for 30 years. Like that was like such a subtle nuance, and it was just like, it's so great. I just love Astro City. It's just the best comic ever.
I would be when I work from home after 2 days, I'm talking to myself in full conversations. I don't know how he's not having like, but
I think he has sensory processing disorder.
When we often talk these days about how, you know, page counts cut to 20 and and it's hard to really get a good issue, a single issue because of that. But Kurt Busiek can do it.
Yeah.
He should teach a class to all the writers. Here's how you tell a story in a single issue, because you're right. You have a full character arc here. I know all about this guy. I know about his backstory. I know about his personality. I know about his genius. We got a little adventure, and then we got a second adventure all within about 20 pages. I can't tell exactly.
But without being spoon-fed,
right?
That, you know, like it didn't feel like a whole issue of explication. It was, though, like the whole, you know, basically it was just him on the island talking to himself, which is, you know, if you look at some of the pages, it was just like that's
walking
a challenge
around
for the artist. There's a page of just all sort of long shots of him walking around his little compound, nothing happening. And I didn't notice that.
Yeah.
Meaning like.
I got lost in trying to see what he was building and the way he was living in a very Swiss Family Robinson style. You know, he builds his whole house and he's got these mechanisms. He's using vines and he's experimenting. You get the sense of this guy's genius and the real kind of tragedy, the fact that not only is the genius wasted by villainy, but it's wasted by being stranded on this desert island. And then the fact that he's an old man now and kind of out of it, you know, makes the resolution where he just decides to stay on his island and live by himself for the rest of his life kind of nice, you know, like it's a nice little a nice little ending.
I hear you, dude.
Yeah, this was
all very loud.
Yeah, it's very, very loud. Yeah, Connor, it was interesting because this for me at least was a light week. I found myself not reading as much as I had in previous weeks, but I had a couple that I really, really liked, and this is definitely a front runner for what would have been my pick for this week, because it just shows. And we've been saying it for as long as we've been doing iFanboy now, for 17 years or 16 years. You know, it doesn't get any better than Astro City. You could skip the Dark Ages, but everything else is amazing. So, and I love that it's even better than ever now at this point. So,
I remember back when we were doing the video show, we were talking about doing some crazy thing where we were going to pick like the top 20 writers of all time, top 20 artists of all time, and that would have taken too long to research. But I think the more I read Kurt Busiek now, the higher on the list I think he's going on my list.
Yep.
He's certainly he's like a craftsman. That's sort of how I, you know, he's not
super flashy, but he's
not
really good at it.
Yep.
He's not Grant Morrison. It's not that. And you think about, I always default to Astro City, obviously, but I think about, is it Superman Secret Identity? That was him, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep.
That's another kind. I mean, basically it's Astro City in a way, but you know, there's that. He was the first real Avengers run that I got into when I got
Avengers,
back.
Marvels.
Yep.
Thunderbolts,
Justice League versus Avengers.
Avengers Forever. Oh man. It's great stuff. I mean,
there's a real strong 10 volume run you can put together. Like here are 10 volumes written by Kurt Busiek that are absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Sort of post bankruptcy.
Yes,
but solid superhero stories with a you know, like a foot in the past and the future.
It was the Jeff Johns of Marvel, right? And he's like, you know,
modern,
but with the
tell you something
responsibility
might be a little better.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Possibly mm-hmm. Worth seeing.
Not quite as impactful, I guess, but that's circumstances.
Well, I'll tell you what's not in competition with anything Kurt Busiek's written, and that's.
I couldn't figure out where to put this in the show because I knew you were going to explode, and I just didn't know where to put it.
This is a nice contrast.
I honestly don't know if I'm going to explode. I mean, it's not like I'm going to, you know, I mean, I've seen some pretty extreme reactions to Inhumans vs. X-Men number 6, or as it's known, IVX number 6.
Why do you think you would explode about the thing that happens? More just the idea of what this whole mess was.
Yeah.
Can I, you're going to get the chance, but so I didn't read it, but I went through it.
Okay.
And here's what I think happened.
Okay. Let's hear the didn't read anything else summary. Go for it.
Yeah, yeah. So no, I didn't even read it. Just sort of flipped through it.
You didn't see the other issues though, right?
No, I do know that there was one team who was in defense of a cloud. That was the Inhumans.
Yes.
And then the X-Men, I suppose, were going after that cloud.
Right.
Yeah, they didn't like that cloud.
Cloud Force.
Fuck that cloud.
Hey.
Cloud Defense Force.
Get off of my cloud. Hey.
Yep.
You.
Basically.
Boy, for a guy who doesn't like the Rolling Stones, you sing it a lot.
I really do. It's kind of discerning. Yeah. Anyway, go on.
So this is the sort of big, the cloud is gone, and there's the big sort of final fight. No one's killed. Wait, no, people are killed. Emma Frost gets mad and blows up a ship, and a lot of people are hurt.
Yep.
Then they all disband, and then she becomes Cyclops in the terrorist mode.
Well, it's sort of like Magneto, because the Cyclops helmet looks like Magneto's helmet. He's got a cape on.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Cyclops is the next Magneto in that, so now she's right. The next Magneto.
Yeah.
Right.
And I guess there could be an anger to that, but she was a villain,
right?
Yeah, I don't have a problem. I don't care about that.
That's my whole. Here's now. This is what I've realized. Well, so to back things up a little, Josh. So my problem with this entire event and this entire series was it was the X-Men literally fighting a cloud and the Inhumans defending the said cloud. And why nobody found a hairdryer and just was done with it, I don't know. But
there's some fans in here.
But and the whole
Peter Mortensen should have done that.
Exactly. The whole reason why the X-Men wanted the cloud dispersed is because it was going to wipe out all of mutant kind. And the whole reason why the Inhumans wanted the cloud is because it's what gets their Terrigen, you know, kind of mist going and their people and whatever. And so finally, in this issue, in the last issue, someone explains to Medusa why the X-Men want to get rid of it. So it says if they can't destroy the cloud now, they'll all die. And Medusa's reaction is, why didn't they just tell us? And it was like, yeah, gee, I don't know. Why the fuck didn't you just tell them a year ago?
That's been my problem with this issue. Well, my problem with this series. My problem with this issue, we'll get to in a second. My problem with this series has been it felt like a complete waste of time.
Yes.
And I realize that that's what events are now. They're not impactful anymore. They don't. Yep. I don't mean that in a everything will change, but in a way that we don't talk. We used to talk about events.
Yep.
Like, remember how good that was?
Secret
and
Invasion.
That story was.
Yeah.
And you know, how fun it was to see that thing. Like, I don't even remember the plots to these things anymore.
Yep.
Because they happen, it seems like they happen every 2 months, especially on the Marvel side. DC hasn't done that. They've got their own problems. But Marvel pumps them out every 2 months.
Well, hold on. Well, I don't want to, not to get too distracted, but I don't want to put DC, not DC doesn't get a free pass in this either, because if you noticed in all of the DC books, at the beginning of the books, there was a promo for the Batman and the Flash miniseries called The Button.
Listen, we'll get to that. Don't waste good material. It's going to come later.
I know, but I'm sorry. I had a problem with the cloud. Now I got a problem with the button. I'm just saying.
It hasn't happened yet. Let's get to it when it happens. But so Marvel pumps these out so often that they just become a blur of meaninglessness. And again, not because everything's going to change, but just because nothing interesting happens. It used to be you built up to these big stories, and then it was interesting at least. And now it's not even that. This was a waste of time.
Yep.
This is a waste of time.
Yep.
I mean, it underscored that in the issue when you said, "Well, why didn't we just talk about this? This could have been averted." Yes, right. It could have.
It's ridiculous. And so that's my whole problem with the entire thing. And then and it seems if the entire thing was just a vehicle to allow Emma to manipulate the X-Men and kind of go over the edge, much like they manipulated Cyclops to do that several years ago to become the villain. And now people are freaking out that Emma is now entrenched as the villain. But and this might be a generation gap thing, but she's always been a villain in my eyes. I've never trusted that woman. And now I do realize that it's 20 years since they put her in Generation X and brought her over to the light side of the X-Men and made her not a villain. But throughout...
You know her.
Yeah.
I know her.
Right, yeah. But we were introduced to her as the White Queen of the Hellfire Club in the late 70s, and that's what she's always been. And leopards don't change their spots, people. I've never trusted Emma.
But that's the only reason that she's been interesting this whole time, as far as I'm concerned. I'm not a scholar by any means. But the fact is that she was a villain, and she was always kind of like, do you trust her? So
right.
It's not a... It's not. I don't think it's an unheard of turn.
Yeah, no.
Although,
you
could say the same for Hawkeye. I mean, do you trust Hawkeye still?
Wasn't actually a villain. He was
He was just a dirty carny.
He was trying to impress Iron Man. He wasn't actually being villainous.
Yeah.
What about
he was trying to get attention?
Scarlet Witch.
They were
the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants.
They were misguided though by they were manipulated by Magneto. They're heroes at heart. But
here's
anyway.
My problem with this issue. So Emma turns into Diamond and puts her hand through Black Bolt's chest.
Yeah.
I mean, it's more like up near his joint.
Yeah.
I feel like a giant diamond hand through your upper chest is going to cause a lot more problems than just he seems to shrug it off.
Yeah. Oh, well, and then I'm sorry.
If it made him cough.
Yeah, but also the wound switches sides halfway through the issue. So on page 9, when she does it, she puts her hand through his right shoulder.
Yep.
And then later on, we see him on page scrolling. He's got a sling on the other arm.
Yep.
And the right arm is fine.
And then also
here,
coming
on page 22.
Yep.
His left shoulder's bandaged up, and his right arm is fine.
Yep. And then coming off of it also, so he gets injured, and it's the big, Emma's taken over Magneto, and they've summoned Sentinels in the big fight, and Black Bolt picks up Medusa, and they fly off, and the Inhumans going, Medusa and Black Bolt together, it's beautiful. Like, go fuck yourself, Inhumans. It's not. I don't give a shit. Like, seriously. Like, that's literally no different than what we've seen since the 60s. Give me a break. Like, this
here's
is
the problem with that. I didn't know that was Black Bolt. Because I wasn't reading it, and I was like, it didn't look like Black Bolt to me. I knew who he was at the end in the bar, because I knew that.
So
but
stupid.
I didn't know that's who I was looking at.
So, the whole thing's just so stupid. It pisses me off. But I'm glad. But here's the thing. I wasn't angry about it before we started talking about it. But what makes me angry, like, I don't care that Emma's now a villain. I don't care that she's aping Cyclops and Magneto style. The X across the eyes is still a dumb look. I think she's better off as a villain. But I'm hopeful because now we can just put this past us and the whole resurrection crap is starting in April and it looks to be in the right direction. You got X-Men Blue and Gold and you've got teams and it's playing the right cards that you need to play to do good X-Men books. So I'm hopeful for the future. I just want to put this past us. That's where I'm at.
So they destroyed the cloud.
Yes, the cloud is now gone. Thank God.
So that means no more new Inhumans, right?
I guess. I don't know. They seem very happy, Medusa and Black Bolt at the bar. So
well, they're about to have a lot of sex. I mean, look at that outfit. Look at that dress.
Yeah.
I mean,
she's always dressed like that.
I know, but I mean, she's
in a tuxedo.
Look at his smile. It's going to happen on the bar.
So what they say is that. Oh, okay. So she says our species' ability to transform through teragenesis does not outweigh the lives of even a single mutant, much less all of them. Many Inhumans did not understand. Years spent telling their children the glory of an emergence of their true forms, which now they'll never see. Yeah, so now there are no more Inhumans.
Right.
So yeah.
That's better than
no new mutants. Yeah, exactly. Agreed. So
and Hawkeye didn't have to wait. Yeah.
And the thing is, guess what? A year from now, oh, new Terrigenesis. It's comics.
Yeah.
Terrigen squalls.
Yeah, exactly.
Terrigen not going to work anymore.
Yeah. So, anyway.
Terrigen Reigns. Green Valley, number six.
Green Valley, number six. I love time travel.
So, well, what I was going to say is, I first got the book and I thought, all right, knights. And then, oh, no, monsters. Oh, wait a minute. It's time travel. Game on.
Yep.
As far as I'm concerned, science fiction, the addition of time travel is not nearly on the same plane as the addition of Supernatural.
Right.
Because in this, at least, it's definitely mashing up genres, but it's basing it in science. It's not spooky magic.
Right. Although the one knight really took it really in stride that he was in the future.
There was a lot of things going on there. The fact is, like, I was actually, the only part I got picky about on this was, like, the dialogue in those scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Because they should have had a lot harder time understanding each other. I like that he did pick that up a little bit. Like, they'd be like, no, it's technology. And he was like, what? But really, almost anywhere. Like, he would have been speaking old English. They wouldn't have. It may as well have been a different language. Science, technology, all those things. He would have been like, what? Like, and he wouldn't have, like, they said physics at one point, and he didn't balk. And I was like, I don't know what fucking physics are.
Yeah, that was the only scene I didn't really love because of that. I was like, he's sort of understanding this pretty well.
I like the idea of it, though.
Yeah, I do.
I think the execution was lacking a little bit, but if you just sort of say, well, it's because funny, like they had written the dialogue in this more like the way that like Brian Wood decides to write Viking dialogue.
Right.
Yeah.
He's like, well, they're going to make them talk like we do. It's just that when you put that up against people today who actually talk like they like, well, that falls apart right there.
Right. But I love the conceit. I love that the guy, the time traveler, you know, brings dinosaurs and that everyone thinks they're dragons and, you know, they think he's a mage because he's got new technology. That part's all fun.
Yep.
And these guys are fun because they're being, at least some of them are being exposed because complete frauds, these legendary knights. And that angle's been really interesting.
And I like their interpersonal sort of relationships and how that all works together and who they are and what it all means and what other people think of them. Like, that's pretty rich.
Right.
That's all great. Apparently, by the way, and I just have to follow up, Giuseppe Camuncoli, who is a phenomenal artist, cannot draw dinosaurs. Like, they're just not quite right.
Yeah.
Well, it was interesting because we saw the velociraptors and they gave him feathers and colors like scientists now say dinosaurs look. But then the T-Rex shows up looking like a Jurassic Park T-Rex.
Jurassic Park was the one that got it right. It was sort of the one before that. It was a little more standy up. He's too.
No. What I mean is, aren't they now all saying none of them were green and gray? They were all colorful and.
Oh, but that like I was more thinking of it in terms of like the posture. You know, like
I was saying because like, the raptors have feathers and they have colors. They were doing the you know what scientists are discovering dinosaurs actually looked like, and then the T-Rex showed up looking like.
If I'm the artist, I'd probably want to go for clarity there.
Yeah.
Meaning, like you could go with sort of the scientific whatever, but like he needs to communicate that it's a Tyrannosaurus Rex, and by making that face look like it does in Jurassic Park, I think that works. Right. I can make an argument for it anyway.
But it's fun. I really enjoy this. I think it's a 9-issue mini.
Is that?
I think so. And so we're at issue 6. So we're at 3 left.
Yeah. That works. Right. It was fun. I really like this issue. I love the series.
Yeah, the series is a blast. I've been recommending
this. This set me up for the last bit, and I was like, "All right, that's cool. That works for me. That's fun."
Yep. All right. So speaking of the last bit, the last issue before we thank our sponsor, I want to talk about is Silver Surfer number 9. This has been gone for a while, right? I feel like it's been a while since. Yeah, it's been a gap. But you know, Dan Slott and Mike Allred jamming on this with Mike Allred on art and his wife Laura Allred doing the colors, and this is just phenomenal.
I've been talking about this book forever. Yeah. Volumes. This has been a fantastic series. It shouldn't work, but it does.
Yep.
And the weirder the book gets, the better the book gets.
Yep.
And here it's weird in that Silver Surfer and Don, his faithful companion Don Greenwood, show up at this new planet where it turns out everyone is a sort of digital copy of their old selves because they destroyed their previous planets. Yeah. And they make a digital copy of Don Greenwood.
Without her permission. Yeah.
Without her permission. So now there's two Don Greenwoods. And the question is, what does it mean to be real? And what happens to the digital copy who's got the emotions, the memories, the personality of the original? You can't just delete her.
Yep.
It's like that Black Mirror episode.
I don't watch Black Mirror. No, I've heard good things. Yeah.
You should. It's very good.
I've heard it's stressful, but
it is. But there's basically, I actually don't want to spoil it.
No, don't.
There's an episode with these kinds of ideas that it's very similar. It makes you think these kinds of things. Go on.
But this book has been great. And it does investigate interesting metaphysical questions like that, but at the same time being sort of a fun, cosmic Silver Surfer tale. Absolutely gorgeous. I mean, Mike Allred draws a hell of a Silver Surfer.
It's amazing not only how beautiful it looks, like Mike Allred and Laura's colors on his art, it's just amazing. The panel layouts were fairly simple in this. It was mainly just a 6-panel grid. You know, some panels were, you know, had 2 panels across the, you know, it was just 1 panel making up where the 2 panels would be. But with the exception of 1 double page spread, two double page spreads actually, it didn't really deviate from that kind of standard storytelling grid. But the art is just amazing. There's so much going on in every panel. But this story was so like complicated and science fictiony but like done in a way that was, you know, like it got it all done in one. This is one and done issue, much like Astro City. Like, this is my other pick for pick of the week because it was just like self-contained.
Most of these, I think this entire volume has been one and done stories for each issue. Yeah. I mean, they're on an adventure through space together, so it's like a continuing thing, but it's each issue is basically a different planet they visit. So
yeah. So great stuff. Great stuff, Silver Surfer. I love it. Thank you, Connor, for making me read this. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
So so we want to take a moment and thank Harry's for sponsoring this 575th episode extravaganza of iFanboy. And I got to tell you, I switched over to Harry's a couple years ago when they first came out because I was desperately looking for a better solution when it comes to shaving. And thankfully, Harry's was it. Not only is it more affordable, it's a better shave. I've never looked back, and that's why I'm so happy that they're sponsoring iFanboy, because we, all three of us, are actually loyal customers well before they were sponsoring. So that was pretty awesome. You know, for years I was going to the drugstore and having to get them to unlock the cabinet and buy the super expensive razors, and it made me not look forward to shaving. And now the ability to go onto the Harry's website, order my shaving cream, order my razors, have it delivered to me for a price that I don't even blink an eye at. It's so affordable. I actually look forward to shaving now, which, if, and you guys know, I hate shaving. And so now, as opposed to dreading it,
you're the only one of us who's never had a beard.
Right, because I hate.
Yeah, he had one.
Well, I know, but not with any real.
I've had beards at different points in life. Like, I've had rally beards when I'm working on a project and things like that. But I
launched that 3.0 version of the website. We all had beards.
Yeah. I prefer.
It wasn't like he's like maintained a beard as a look.
Right, but it wasn't like he's like, I'm going to be a beard guy now.
Right, no, I'm
it
not
was,
a beard guy.
It was always like, I need to get rid of this. I need to get rid of this.
Yeah, no, in fact, I'm a clean shaven guy. I mean, I do have my sideburns, mind you, but I do not want a beard. Harry's helps me stay clean shaven every day, which is fantastic. And it's all thanks to the founders of Harry's, the two guys, Jeff and Andy, who were also fed up with being overcharged. So they started their own razor company with Harry's. They really committed to it, and they bought a factory with over 100 years of experience in making blades, and these are fantastic razors. And because they own the factory, they're able to sell them online, ship them directly for half the price of the other brands out there. And so listen, Harry's gives you everything you need for a close, comfortable shave. You get 5 German-engineered blades on a razor, which is awesome. It has a lubricating strip, which is a must-have. It's got a flex hinge for a comfortable glide, which is, makes it so easy to shave my face. They recently added that trimmer blade for those hard-to-reach places, which I use regularly to trim my sideburns, which is perfect. And the handle is weighted and ergonomic, and it's got grip, so you can hold onto it even in the shower like Connor. You won't slip it and drop it. Yeah, so it's fantastic.
Exactly.
And so you get all this for just $2 a blade compared to at least the $4 or more you pay at the drugstore. So I don't see how you can go wrong with Harry's. And Harry's doesn't see how you can go wrong either. And they're so confident in the quality of their blades, they want you to try the most popular trial set for absolutely free. It comes with a razor handle of your choice, a 5-blade cartridge, and shaving gel. And when you sign up, you just got to pay a small fee for shipping, and you could have it for free. Give it a shot. There's nothing you got to lose other than just waiting a couple of days to get it. That's all. It's just time. That's all. So to redeem your free trial offer, go to harrys.com/ifanboy right now. Go to harrys.com/ifanboy. Get on board. Be clean shaven. Join the rest of us. Thank you, Harry's, for your support and making such a great product.
You know, you could think of a beard just as a bigger sideburn.
No.
It's just one way to think about it.
It's sure. It's one way you can think about it.
Okay. It's a circuitous sideburn. Just
so the Adventures of Jessica Jones continue. Jessica Jones number 6. And we told you last time how it was the really great issue where she interrogated the guy who came from the old universe, who basically put the bug in her head that her friends fucked up the universe in the Secret Wars crossover.
Sure.
Is that the name of it? And that people are, you know, came over from the other universe. So she's dealing with that as she goes off to help her new friends at Hydra capture Captain Marvel using Spot. Spot's just great.
yeah, he is.
But here we also find out that she was playing Hydra the whole time, which is not a big surprise.
It was a borderline disappointing. I was like, oh.
But also,
yeah, I wasn't surprised.
What else are you gonna do?
Yeah,
I wasn't surprised by it. But I'm more interested in the idea of she knows. Because during this whole thing, she's trying to find out from Carol if Carol knows that the universe is all fucked up, and that you know, I like that part of it. That part's interesting.
Yeah.
I also really liked the Iron Fist Luke Cage scene.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought this was a little convenient wrap up, kind of like, oh, you think it's a double cross, but it's a triple cross, and I was just like, eh. But other than that, I do like the little flashback to the guy from last issue, and I want to see where that goes.
Ron, it's the old switcheroo.
The old switcheroo.
I didn't read the ones before that. I didn't go catch up, but I read this one. Here's my thought. I feel like the swearing is out of place.
Well,
it's funny. I, I, after watching Logan, my thought while reading this was like, this is like the real Marvel Universe, and the other comics are like the comics that are being made about the real Marvel Universe.
I haven't seen it.
Does that make sense, Ron?
Yeah, it makes sense. It absolutely makes sense. And Josh, why wouldn't you go back and read the last issue that were like, you've got to read this, and you didn't?
I didn't remember until I went to get this one and have time.
Okay.
So I just was like, I'll read this one. I like doing that. I like, if you can pick it up, like I was like, oh, I picked it up. It was fine.
I got there
and I was like, all right, I was supposed to read all these. I'm not reading four of them right now. No. So we're just going for it.
Well, you don't need to read four. You just need to read
the last one. Just read the last one. Just go back and read the last one.
I don't know how it ends. Who cares?
Moving on. Nova number four. Get a little taste of what I love about Ramon Perez in this. A little taste. When young Nova is going out on his first date and he's imagining what will happen when he knocks on the door and we get a little change in art style. And I was like, oh, do this.
I want him to do that, but I also want the whole thing to be about Rich Rider. So
True. Agreed. Remember, we like the first issue we didn't like, second issue we loved, third issue we weren't as into, fourth issue wasn't as good as the second issue, but it's not as bad as the first and third. So
it's very complicated.
It's pretty good.
I'm liking it more.
Initial instinct was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's pretty, like I when I saw it this week, I went, oh, like I looked forward to it.
Yeah.
Rich Rider is a boon to the book.
Yeah. Absolutely. So,
for
another fourth issue was Mother Panic number four from the Young Animal imprint over at DC. And this up to this point, the first three issues had art by Tommy Lee Edwards. And I saw that he was off the book for this issue. And I went, ugh. But then I saw it was Sean Crystal, who, while his art style is as different as you can get from Tommy Lee Edwards, I thought it was great. And
my thought was this art's really good. If it had been the art the whole time, that'd been fine. But the drop off from Tommy Lee Edwards was tough.
The change in tone was tough. But for me, because my whole thing about this is Mother Panic is a new character, right? It's a new character in the Gotham Bat universe, right? Admittedly, it's in Young Animal, but it's in continuity because she met with Batwoman last issue. And in order for this new character to take, and I want to see new characters. I want to see new things, right? And in order for it to take, other artists have to be able to draw it. And that's the thing, is that at first, you're right, it was jarring. But by the end of the issue, I was like, I'm totally convinced this character has got legs. So I was happy to see that. And I like Sean Crystal a lot. I like Sean Crystal's art a lot. So
yeah, the art's good. I'm not sure how I feel about the character yet.
I'm on board. I'm all behind Mother Panic. I love it.
So this is the penultimate issue of Power Man and Iron Fist, right? 15's the last one.
Yep.
I believe. Who put this on the list?
I did, because I thought that I was like, oh, this is going away kind of soon, so I want to make sure we are touching on it while it's here. But also, I thought it was a really nice upping the stakes in terms of Alex Wilder and making him really like a certifiable big bad for this.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed that. It's still a little bit silly. I like that sort of they shifted focus and how they're doing things.
It's silly. I started laughing because I was looking at the page 20 where Danny gets sucked into the little box and his legs are sticking out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's funny. All that at the same time. But it's still like a big bat. It just doesn't feel like any of the other books. But it built on a thing where I think maybe before this, I was like, I don't really like this storyline so much. And this one was like, all right, I'm down. You've nailed me down here again. I guess that was it. I dug it. I was looking forward to maybe a little bit less.
Yeah, I mean, you'd hope that they would get sort of a quiet issue to end on, but clearly not if they're going down into hell.
Which is so out of place for the street level heroes written by the guys who are, and this is highly quote unquote, it's the street level guys, because the whole thing has been that, you know, like it's been all, everything is on the streets of Harlem and everything. And so now they're like, oh yeah, it's like taking the TV show,
right?
You know, down to hell, which would be, I'd actually like to see that.
And you know what? I'm constantly complaining about the costumes. I'm just going to say I enjoy this Iron Fist costume. I enjoy the tracksuited Iron Fist.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. Yeah.
I enjoy Queen's pants. Iron Fist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm down. Yeah. Hey, I live in Queens. I'm down.
He doesn't want to walk.
He doesn't want to walk.
So, patron pick. So, if you are a patron at patreon.com/ifanboy, every week you can vote. And that's every level of patron, by the way. You can vote on a book to add to the show. Last week, Ron and I said, you know, we were getting about 20% of the patrons that were voting. This week, we had about not twice as many votes, but maybe 50% more votes. And that was fun to see.
Which is great.
Which put a lot of books into contention until Man-Thing number one exploded in votes and ended up being like the biggest winner we've had so far. I think he was like, he had almost twice as many votes as the second place book. And after that, it was like ridiculous how many more votes he had. Like, it was like 10 times as many votes as the fourth place book. People wanted us to read Man Thing number one, which is, I have to say, I would never have read it. So that's how the pick, the patron pick works.
Yep.
Man Thing number one, written by R.L. Stine of Goosebumps fame, the 70-ish year old children's book writer, art by German Pallotta. And what did we think?
Go ahead.
After you, Josh.
It sounds like we're on the same page here. Who is this for?
Right.
It feels like they were trying to do like an all ages book, but it's the Man Thing. So no kid is ever going to buy Man Thing.
Right.
So I'm stuck reading this book that's written for an 8-year old. It's not interesting. I don't know what the point is. And why did they think this artist was professional?
And also what gets me is that did you count the pages?
It was a little short.
It was a little short. It was
fine.
It was 16 pages.
Actually, you know what? That's fine because I really enjoyed the backup.
Yeah, the backup was actually better than the lead
story.
The backup
was a 4-page murder story that I don't know how I'm not versed in the Man Thing lore. I don't know how it connected, but it seemed to have nothing to do with Man Thing. But it was as a 4-page short story.
Right.
I thought it was really good in terms of setting up a character, setting up a situation, and then a sort of result of the situation. But my problem with this, I didn't actually think the art was that bad, but I don't know about you guys, but I like my Man Thing quiet and scary and background.
He wasn't Thunderbolts.
And here you've got a Man Thing who talks like a normal person, who makes bad jokes, who is working in Hollywood. And I was like, I don't like this Man Thing at all. I don't like him. I don't like a Man Thing walking through Burbank and talking to people.
That was actually Burbank, though. I got to give them credit for that shot. I was like, oh, that's definitely.
I'm not someone who's read a lot of Man Thing. Man Thing always shows up. It's really scary. People are afraid of him. He touches people. They burn. And none of that.
Here
he's like just some weird dude working in Hollywood, but he's also Man Thing. It was weird.
I'll tell you one thing. Steve Gerber is rolling over in his grave.
Well, have you read old Man Thing books?
For many things. No, I mean, I'm familiar with Man Thing. Man Thing was one of the...
I don't know how it characters is what I'm saying. I don't know.
No. Man Thing was one of the great characters of the 70s kind of genre Marvel time, you know, when they were doing a lot of horror and a lot of stuff like that. And, you know, that run on Steve Gerber's run on the series was admittedly, I didn't read it, but it was super influential and super, you know, like a lot of people love that. And I think then they haven't really known what to do. Tastes have changed. I get on paper the idea, okay, we'll get R.L. Stine, who writes Goosebumps and does horror stuff, to write Man Thing. But Josh, you nailed it. He's a kid's writer.
Well, it's an all ages. He's an all ages writer.
He's an all ages.
It doesn't matter. I would tell you that, and this is my expectation, it is not what I expected of a Man Thing book, and I don't know who would expect that of a Man Thing book. Like, there's a place where that belongs. If I'm reading this in Devil Dinosaur or even a version of the Avengers, that's fine. I get it. But I don't.
Yeah.
What 8-year old is like, oh, Man Thing, that's my. And then the story didn't really fit with the tone because it was like about Hollywood, and it wasn't Man Thing. It was Swamp Thing. Like, I feel like there was a fundamental misunderstanding there.
Yeah.
There was a bunch of weird, like, I mean, not weird, but a bunch of cliched Hollywood jokes and like.
Yep.
It's just like,
maybe we're too close to it. I don't know.
And I was like, okay, Man Thing. The cover is him in a swamp. I was like, okay, it'll be a horror book, and I'll see how that goes because Man Thing's weird. I don't know much about him. But then I saw it was the words "Those Who Know Fear" was written like the Hollywood side. And I said, oh, that's odd. And then I opened it up, and he's shooting a movie, and I said, oh, this isn't what I want at all. So
it was just very jarring. I mean, and again, I don't know what the purpose of it is, but I don't know. What are you gonna do?
All right, so ratings.
Ratings. Ratings.
Ratings.
Josh.
Ratings. 2.
All right. I probably
great cover. Let's get a point for that.
I probably go 2.5.
I'm gonna go 2.5 because I really did like the backup a lot.
Okay, and sticking with it.
No.
No. All right.
No. All right. So that's the patron pick. Patreon.com/iFanboy is where you get to vote every week. And also, you get to, if you're at a certain level, you get your own superpower name. We like to thank the patrons on the show by giving them dumb superpowers. And this week, we start off with Josh.
Oh, well, first one up is going to be Randy Wood, obviously. He sounds like a person I know. But I, anyway.
He's also a longtime pitcher, isn't he, Ron? With the journeyman pitcher?
Oh, yeah, yeah, you're right.
Well, the one word for him is carbonation.
Okay.
He can carbonate liquids. He just puts his finger in it.
Yeah. Man,
carbonation.
All right.
So if your soda's gone flat, he can...
Uh-huh.
Boom.
Yeah. Or if you just have regular lemonade and you're like, hey, Randy, can you spice this up for me? He's like, no problem. But he does have to dip his finger in it, which some people might find distasteful at a party.
Is it only the finger?
I mean, theoretically, you could do it with other body parts, but in just terms of practice.
Right.
I would say his skin, his pores have the ability to carbonate something.
Right. Okay.
Carbonation.
That's useful. I mean, nothing worse than a flat drink after it's gone, you know, you're expecting a fizzy soda and it goes flat on you.
If he was on Top Chef, it's a leg up.
Right. Okay. Daniel Fortis, thanks for being a patron. Daniel can make literally anything out of Legos.
Literally.
Literally anything. You can make a plane. The plane will work. The plane will fly. However, the plane is made out of Legos, not very sturdy.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Also, he
and
needs
then
enough,
also
he
there's
needs enough Legos, too.
I mean, yeah, I was going to say the economics of any major project are significant.
Yeah, he has to have the raw material. He just can't make the Legos.
And I'll tell you one thing. Legos are not cheap.
No, and he's always stepping on them because he's always got them around. And everyone else is always stepping on them, too.
Again, from experience, you do not want that to happen. This guy's a disaster.
Right.
But if you give him enough Legos and enough time, he can make anything. It just won't stand up very well to any kind. I mean, you could punch the plane and it falls apart.
All right, then. All right, so our next patron we want to thank is Jeffrey Lang, who has the amazing ability to able to translate any image in his head to clay, much like on Alicia Masters of the Fantastic Four, but the only hitch is it's in the cubism style.
Like Picasso?
So he's just a cubist artist?
He's a cubist artist, but yeah, but sculptor.
It sounds to me like he's just an artist.
Yeah, just a sculptor.
No, but the thing is that they're just amazing. Like he, it's Connor, you put the cubist sculpture of you next to you that he did of you, and they look exactly the same, but you're cubist.
Right, so he's an artist. He's a cubist artist.
Exactly.
I just feel like he's very good at doing that.
Well, no, but it's
going to a trance state.
Does yeah, exactly.
He doesn't know.
Exactly. He just closes.
Does he do it super quickly, or
no? He does. Sometimes they take days. You know, like they really got. He's got to really work at it.
He's just an artist, just a regular artist. He's really good at cubism.
No, but he can't do anything but cubism. He tries other styles, and they all come out cubism. Well,
let's be honest. He failed art school. This was supposed to be impressionism. I know. This is just what happens.
So it's a blessing and a curse.
No. I see. Okay.
Now, the assignment was to do a pastel and charcoal drawing here, but what you presented once again, Jeffrey, is a cubist sculpture. And while it is very good on its own, this was not the point of the assignment.
Yep. All right, so walks next up is Jeffrey Lang. Let's see what he did this time. Oh, cubist sculpture. All right. Okay, last one.
Daniel Ryan, he's either cursed or blessed. With sticky toes.
With what kind of toes?
Sticky.
Sticky?
Yeah, sticky toes.
Sticky toes, like Spider-Man.
A little like Spider-Man, but much less useful. Like, they're just always sticky. Like, imagine a piece of tape, but if you pressed it on dust and stuff, it wouldn't ever...
You never lose the tackiness.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Now, can he...
It's just his toes,
not his feet. Can he, like...
Right.
What level of tackiness can he walk up a wall with just his toes?
Gaffer tape. So no.
Okay, so can't hold his weight.
No, not really.
Interesting.
All right.
I'm struggling to come up with a use for this.
Well, sometimes you don't need to have a use, you know, like.
it's long been my contention that, like, in the mutant world, there are, you know, a large percentage of them who have completely innocuous and useless powers they don't ever bother talking about.
Right.
That was that was Grant Morrison's whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Even more so.
Yeah.
Well, he could pick up paper you've dropped.
Yeah.
Oh no, he's very good at like cleaning up around the house.
Right. Can he use it to like clean his jacket?
Yep. Yep. Good for lint. Never has to buy those lint rollers.
Lint roller is his mutant name. Is his X-Men
name.
Yeah,
but just his toes.
Well,
and the rolling action actually is part of the benefit of that product.
Lint toes.
Yeah.
That implies those things. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's how you can support the show, and that's how you can get your own superpower name. That's let's just thank the patrons real quick, Josh.
Yeah, obviously I want to thank the patrons. Patrons?
Patrons.
I would like to thank them by getting that right at some point. I want to thank the patrons. And you might wonder how you can become one. You would go over to ifanboy.com/support. There you're going to find a couple of things. You will find our Amazon link, and you can use that to find your way to Amazon.com. It's a big retail website. You might have heard of.
It's got a lot of things that you could get.
Yeah, I mean, and also like from a lot of sources, pretty much any kind of product. It's super useful if you haven't heard of it. And if you go and use that link, anything that you purchase from there, which again could literally be anything, we'll get a small piece of that.
What was the last thing you got at Amazon? Your most recent purchase, Josh, Ron.
Stuff for my kid. I bought a set of drums for my son's 3-year-old birthday, several toys, and a Audio Technica stylus gauge.
Ron?
All right, I'm literally going into my my order section on Amazon. This is a live reading of my recent orders on Amazon. The last thing I bought was Josh's birthday present, the 25th anniversary edition of Workbook by Bob Mould. Before that, I bought a tripod desktop desk microphone stand for my new microphone and a First Alert combination smoke carbon monoxide alarm with battery backup. And then before that, I bought a plush sloth doll for my niece. So look at all those things you can get.
I bought an Apple MagSafe to MagSafe 2 converter so I could use the old plug we have around.
Nice. Well done. Well done.
Yep. I'm pretty close to buying a spin clean record washing system.
Not surprised.
Yeah, because it's starting to really bug me.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Anyway, where was I? Is that good content or is that not good content? I don't know. You will also find a link to our PayPal donation if you like the show and what we're doing. You say, I want to throw this in cash because I want to support it. You can find a link for that. And again, if you're really wealthy and you're not going to get a tax write-off for this, we are not a nonprofit organization.
Not 501c or anything.
Yeah.
But if you're thinking, God, I need to give some old nerds some money. Well, guess what, buddy? I got your spot. And then finally, we spoke about the patrons earlier. You will find the link to patreon.com/ifanboy, where you can sign up to be an ongoing supporter of the show that we do here and have done here for well over a decade. And of course, the folks who do that are among the greatest people in the world, certainly from our point of view. But you can become part of that. You'll see there's different levels of patron support and also different goals that you can all reach together. I think we've talked about this. Maybe you don't even believe us anymore, but the T-shirts are definitely closer to becoming a reality. But that was the last sort of overall patron goal that we achieved. And you can sort of see, you know, if you guys really band together, you could make some things happen. You know, it would be significant, but it could happen. And you'll see all that there at patreon.com/ifanboy. And of course, if you're a member, you're going to get eventually, you're going to get your superhero name. You can come to our patron hangouts that happen where we just shoot the shit.
I'm very excited about this upcoming hangout in which we decide the goddamn All American Treasures. What is it?
American Treasures, yeah. And then the goddamn American Treasures. The GDAT. Treasures. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Who are the GDATs? Yeah.
So.
All right. Thanks to everyone who supports the show. Let's do a really quick email. Ryan S. says, after thinking about this question for the entire weekend after seeing Logan on Thursday night, I wanted to know what the most recent essential X-Men story is. Essential here meaning the storyline that should be essential to any fan of the character, not necessarily important from a continuity perspective so much as a damn good comic. Green Lantern, Batman, and Daredevil all had excellent runs within the past decade or so, but it's harder to answer this for the X-Men, Flash, Green Arrow, or any number of high-profile heroes. So feel free to expand beyond the mutants if you have time. Ron, let's focus on the X-Men. What's the last essential X-Men story?
As much as I hate Tough. My first gut was gonna say Astonishing X-Men, the Joss Whedon.
Joss Whedon.
Right.
In 2000.
But I will actually amend that. And
almost a generation ago.
I will amend that and say that it is Wolverine and the X-Men by Jason Aaron. That first volume really.
Not the school.
No, it's the school. Yeah.
Well, right, but yeah, what was the later version of it? Like there was a.
No, there was is when Wolverine takes over as the headmaster, the Jean Grey school. Like that first volume of it was just as perfect can be. And Chris Pacello, Nick Bradshaw, Ramon Perez, like you had a bunch of different artists on that, but it spoke to the values and themes of the X-Men better than anything has done in recent time. So the Regenesis was the story arc. It was basically the one that it kind of covers in there. And then it gets pulled into Avengers versus X-Men and Marvel Now and all that kind of crap, and it kind of dies off as it goes on. But that first volume is fantastic. So there you go.
That's essential. That's essential.
Essential. Wolverine and the X-Men Volume 1 is essential. So
okay. Yep. There you go. So if you have a question, you can email us at contact@fanboy.com. That's how you get it in the show. That's how you get Ron to really dive deep into his X-Men lore.
Yeah. Let's talk about Dazzler. Let's go deep on Dazzler.
So we had our month of podcasts in February. The last two are out on your feed. Josh interviewed Judd Winnick on a Talksplode show in which they went through his career and had a really great time talking about that. Ron and I just released the Logan review show late last week. So you can find that on the feed right behind this show. Where it was part movie review, part therapy session, as we closed the door on the Hugh Jackman era.
I'm still upset about it. I'm still dealing with it.
Yeah, but that's a great, good movie, good show to listen to. Check that out right behind this one.
Yes, and then we've also got it's March, and so that means it's time for another Booksplode, which is going to be coming up soon. We're gonna be talking about a very, very fun. And timeless, let's say that.
Do we want to announce what it is?
Do you want to announce it? Yeah, Connor, why don't we announce it? What is the book going to be?
We're going to be talking about The Flash by Mark Waid, Volume 1. So last time we were super indie. This time we're going super mainstream with the compilation, the first compilation, hopefully there'll be more, of the legendary Mark Waid run on The Flash.
Yes, one of my favorites. So I can't wait to revisit that. And as we mentioned earlier, we're going to be hosting a patron hangout on March 19th in the evening. So keep an eye out for that. So be sure you mark your calendars for that. And we'll be talking about goddamn American treasures. And then on March 17th, Netflix drops the latest Marvel series, Iron Fist. And we will gather to talk about it on a podcast forum. Although set your expectations. We got to watch it. It's a lot to watch. But from early reviews, it looks like we might have our first stinker. So I'm excited about this one.
We had one already. It was called Cage, Luke Cage.
I didn't think that was a stinker. That wasn't a stinker.
Yeah, we had Method Man in it. Opinions vary.
Yes, true. Fair enough. Anyway, so Iron Fist, very curious to see what they do with that before we go into Defenders. But so stay tuned to your RSS feeds.
If you want to defend Method Man and Luke Cage, you can head over to iFanboy.com, which you should. I can't even work now. No, you can find all of our podcasts there. You can find this show. You can comment on it and other shows that we did. You can find a vast backlog of material that is there. Go through all of our old top five articles. Those were great, I'm saying, about what I did. You can like facebook.com/ifanboy or go to @ifanboy on Twitter. You can find out what the pick is before the show comes out. And you can follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan, @RonXO, and @CSKilpatrick on Twitter and Instagram. But Connor hasn't posted since July, so maybe skip.
If you want to have a good time, go to the website, put in the search bar, What's Wrong With You, and watch Josh throw Nerd Chum in the water and everyone freak out in the comment section.
It's a fun time.
I had to stop doing them because it was too stressful.
So you can go back and read those and find why we don't miss doing the website. And if you like the show, you can write us a review on iTunes. Leave us a star rating. It just takes you 1 second just to do that. Better yet, tell your friends. You can keep telling your moms. We've heard from a handful of iFan moms, and we appreciate that. If you're an iFan mom out there, you want to drop us a line, we still welcome that. Help us spread the iFanboy love all over the world. And that's it for this week's show. Thank you for listening. I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
And I'm Josh. Thank you. Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.